I'm Gabby's Robbo. Yeah, that's right. Jewel's on holiday this week. What a shock. It's getting cold in West London, but what a show we have because it's international football, Robbo.
Yeah.
Big stakes, World Cup qualifying in South America. And of course, throughout Europe, there's a lot going on. But we're going to start with the group involving Spain, Norway, and Scotland. Mm-hmm. The group that Scotland and Spain looks like they're going to qualify. Norway not 100% out of it yet. They can take the route via the playoffs, but it's a conundrum for me, Robert. Mm-hmm. After losing last night at home to Spain, the Spain team really didn't have that much to play for. Mm-hmm. Now they're literally on the brink of missing out on another major tournament after the World Cup. And these World Cups and Euros get bigger and bigger. And weirdly, Norway, despite Erling Haaland, despite Martin Ødegaard, despite Sander Berg, despite all of these stars, they're in danger. And who better to help us understand this than...
He'll understand it all.
Well, Stalis Solbakken. No, Stalis Solbakken might be even better. But we'll get the next best thing. We'll get Jan Augustsdottir. Jan, obviously, you're a fan. You've been involved with the Norway setup. Somebody looks at this and says, wait a minute, you have such riches. Why? Why the struggles? Why the struggles against, with all due respect, Scotland? I know smaller nations, it is about generations, it's the luck of the draw. But, you know, Scotland don't have the great generations that they've had in the past right now, and Norway do.
Yeah, and it is a good question. And what's quite peculiar, that these questions are more put to me from people outside Norway, because in Norway we tend to have a football discussion. We're so happy that we can put some passes together. Against Spain, we couldn't do that either. We couldn't play out from the back. Spain were in all kind of departments better than us. That is point one. We brought the king in, we brought the prime minister in, we brought the minister of sport in. We could have sold 100,000 tickets, and we're ending up playing a bad game. And Gab, you were talking about it a bit, because this is a very unbalanced Norwegian team. You have Erling Haaland and Martin Ødegaard. Going forward, fantastic. You have midfield players. You said Sander Berg. I would also put in Ausnes, who's playing for Benfica. He's playing in Champions League. Very, very talented player. We have two young kids in Nutsa, Bob. Nutsa from Bruges and Bob, of course, from Manchester City. But what they do have in common is that they are in the department of creativity. And Norway, historically, we were always a good nation of defenders. Back in, and I'm not saying everything were better in the past, which is obviously was, but I'm not saying that. And we had defenders all over the place. We had Ronny Johnsen, Henning Berg, we had Rune Bratseth at Werder Bremen. We had Ellen Johnsen, who played 9 years with Chelsea and couldn't get into the national team. And no, we don't produce defenders anymore. Which is quite the big discussion here, I think. I have one theory that we can just put out there. I think that we in Norway, we use a lot of AstroTurfs. That sounds, what is that to do with defenders? BS, because when you play on AstroTurf, everybody wants to be central midfielders. Everybody wants to do a trick. Everybody wants to do the Cruyff turn. Nobody, and we had this discussion in Norway, in England as well, saying nobody wants to have a target in life to be Gary Neville. But the Gary Nevilles of this world, they are the main players in great teams. And we have to get defenders, and we don't have it.
Robbo, Jan listed all of the attacking riches. He didn't even mention the only living Sørloth in captivity as well. You can chuck him into the mix as a goal scorer too. I want to ask you about Spain and Scotland, because obviously Spain, the accusation's been that they've been unbalanced in the past. Scotland, the accusation is everything's negative and depressing, the glory days, where's dog leash, blah, blah, blah. But he's found the balance. Can you say some nice things about Scotland?
Yes, and you're absolutely right. He has found the balance. They've defended well all around the pitch. They've got a game plan that they work to. They've got one or two players that are above average, like Robertson and players like that. Certainly in the front areas, they haven't got top quality players, but they play to a system. We saw in the friendly against England that when they're up against the very best nations, they're going to struggle.
Although not just them, but England too.
Yeah, but they beat Spain, of course, at home, which was one of their best performances for a long, long time. But the manager's got the team playing for him. The crowd have got behind him. The nation have got behind him. And you can see the confidence builds with when they go on these trips and when they're playing these games. So Scotland and Steve Clarke have done a good job to get where they are at the moment.
All right, let's talk a little bit more about Spain, because I think what we're seeing a little bit with the bigger nations, they rattle off 5-6 wins. I mean, you see this with England, you see this maybe a little bit with France, although France is slightly different dynamic. And obviously, you know, Spain did have their nose bloodied with Scotland and De La Fuente taking over and whatever. But for them, the leagues are so big, it's almost like a nuisance. Mm-hmm. You couldn't have a misstep. So I get the impression that sometimes coaches try to bring in players who might have that little bit of extra motivation. So when I looked at this lineup, I mean, obviously he's played Laporte and Lenormand before at the back.
Yep. Right?
So yeah, let me, you know, play for somebody who's maybe not a superstar like Lenormand. Let me play the guy who's living in Saudi Arabia and is maybe dying to get Europe to remember that he still exists. Let me play Ansu Fati, who, you know, a year ago, next big thing at Barcelona, now he's on loan at Brighton, and he's certainly not an automatic choice. But then the glue keeping it all together was Rodri. And let me start with you, Jan. You were really impressed with the way they lined up. I mean, this is not Spain's best 11 in the sense, obviously, there was no Pedri or Yarzabal, who I think should always start, came on. Obviously, no Dani Olmo, whatever. But they had the measure, yeah?
They had, absolutely. And imagine, you come to Norway. I'm not saying Norway is a dangerous place to come for any opponent at present time. But still, you come there. This is our chance. Spain, as you were saying, Spain would have still made it. The two games they will play, they would have made it. But it was something about, and I think it was the first 15 minutes, there was 75% of ball possession. There was something about the balance in the way that they played. Rodri, of course, being the key, with a cigar and a paella in the middle, he was like above everybody what he was steering the play. No, never stressed. Never stressed at all. They played out from the back. I'm allergic to playing out from the back when you're a bad team. I think that should only be allowed for Manchester City, Barcelona, Real Madrid, and Spain. So that's where I'm coming from.
It depends, Jan, whether you're allowed to play it from the back. And Norway allowed Spain to play it from the back because they just played one up front. And Odegaard went back into midfield. So they played almost a 4-1-4-1. And it allowed Spain to develop the play, which makes it easier for a team like Spain because they can then make their movements, then they can make their runs. And Carvajal had the freedom of the park down the right-hand side. I thought Norway helped Spain by not really pressing them too high up the field.
Valid point, but it's always, do they do that because they're afraid? When you know, when you don't do the high pressure, is that you're sometimes afraid that you will be played out, you know?
Absolutely.
And that's why I started with, this could be a place, I would love to see Norway being top over them, straight at them, go into Rodri, make a free kick after 5 minutes, take a yellow card, get Rodri down. That's what I wanted to see. Didn't happen. But when we are talking about Spain as well, and we can talk about the Morata, how long has he been alone? He's everywhere. Then he suddenly turns up as being a captain. He's everywhere. Very, very clever striker. He was also a part of their playing. There was never stress around their game. And that's what I like. I see a lot of games when I work, of course, and then you sit with your thoughts and you're thinking of your interviews and everything. So I was watching this game and just watching Spain, how calm they were on the ball, how calm they were the way they played up. Yeah, Robbo, very valid point. They played Norway, but Norway should have taken them on. And that's what I'm most disappointed. We would have maybe lost 2-3 nil anyway if we went all in, but still we would have gone all in. We weren't at the game at all. And Spain, 2-3 classes above us. And that is what is disappointing me the day after we were more or less out of the Euros.
Yeah. I mean, you always wonder what, first of all, shout out to Morata. You know, I've been a long time fan. He's averaging nearly a goal a game this season. Okay. In typical Morata fashion, like the tapping that he gets, where if he doesn't touch it, it's an own goal in the first half, and it gets in. The second one where he could have been offside. He didn't know if he was onside or offside. Without that, Xavi doesn't score. The goal gets chalked off. Let's not forget that, right? So it's almost like, you know, he's like the kid in Charlie Brown that always has a cloud over him, right? Like, you know, seems like bad things always happen around him, but a lot of good things do. And I think he's showing so much personality as he gets older.
Yes. Murata, when I saw him play for Juventus, probably where you saw a lot of him play, he, for me, was one of the best strikers in the world at that particular time. He could receive balls into his body. He could turn people. He could run past people. He was scoring goals. He was making goals. He was drifting out to the left-hand side. And if ever there's a player that you can guarantee when he's lacking confidence will play badly, and when he's full of confidence, he plays really well, he's the player that epitomises that. You know, he just makes strange decisions when his confidence is low. You know, the ball will be played into him and he'll try and play a ball back 50 yards to the right back rather than actually getting hold of it. So the only problem with Morata is his mentality. His actual ability, his technical ability is as good as any centre forward around the world at times.
For me, Gab, he's Scottie Pippen. He's Scottie Pippen. He's always playing with a superstar and we tend to forget how good he really is, you know? He's somewhere in the shadow. But that's why I so enjoyed watching him yesterday. Yes, he did that to the goal. That is an instinct. You want to score that goal. You didn't think of the rules in your head. You wanted to get that ball over the line. But he, sometimes, as Rob was saying, with his mentality, sometimes also with his body language, then again, he doesn't look like he's in there. He looked like he exploded. But what a striker. There are not many strikers of his generation around who knows his football as good as Morata.
I want to get you back on the approach that Norway took in this game and specifically around Erling Haaland, because it looked to me like a lot of times it was long balls and stuff, and this might have also to do with Spain's heavy possession. You win it back, you release him, see what happens, maybe he gets fouled, maybe run somebody over and scores. When you play for Manchester City, you get a certain type of service, which necessarily is going to be very different from the kind of service you get with Norway because, you know, let's face it, other than Ødegaard, I don't know anybody else is getting close to that City 11. But then I think back, okay, this guy also, okay, when he was at Salzburg, he also had a dominant team. When he was at Dortmund, though, he scored a ton of goals on a team that was often all over the place, you know, maybe probably more talented than Norway, but equally not a team that was dominant all the time. Is it the right approach to get the best out of him? You know, sort of keeping it tight and then waiting for him to do something or hoping that you can get him the ball in one-on-one situations or...
Yeah,
could there have been a tweak there other than the whole team being more aggressive towards him? Because obviously he's not going through a great patch right now in terms of, I mean, I say this, see him missing a lot of goals, but then you look at it and he's still scoring sort of a goal every 100 minutes. So she's exceptional, right? Well, your take?
I think there is a bit fact. He has played 28 games for Norway and scored 27 goals. I mean, let's just take that. So he's scoring goals also for Norway. That is point one. Point two, in his kind of patches that he doesn't score, and was it three games now before he scored two, had a brace against Cyprus the other day. Also, when you see Manchester City now, he's tying up a lot of players in the middle, so they get one against one. On the side, seems that the opponents haven't noticed that is also part of the tactic of Manchester City. I think that what you're saying is that it will be very hard for Erling Haaland to do the success that he's had for Manchester City. Of course it will at Norway. He won't have a De Bruyne around him. He won't have a Silva. He won't have a Rodri who kind of make the balance in the team. But that's what it is. There are so many advantages being a Norwegian, but when it goes to qualify for tournaments, it's a bad thing to have a red passport of Norway. Of course it is. That is the problem we are having. We are like 23 years away now from our last tournament. That is scandalous. And it's interesting that I discussed this with you because in Norway, Ståle Solbakken will say, no, we have improved and this and that. And then you have people like Kjetil Rekdal, I remember him. We were all teammates in the same team. And he said, this is a fiasco. How can you not get enough out of this team? And all that kind of thing. And of course, the first one he would point at is Erling. He would point at Martin because they're going to take us into the heaven of football tournaments. But again, Erling, he has scored nearly one goal in a game for Norway. So he's not the main problem. If he's the main problem, I mean, well, then we have to have a look at the other problems.
He might not be the main problem. Certainly not the main problem. But I think sometimes the manager that's playing him starts to say, because we've got such a great striker up front who can run in behind and he's strong and powerful, then we can defend a lot deeper because we can get more, we can be more compact in midfield, we can be try and be more compact at the back. So you end up isolating him and he's got far more work to do and he doesn't become so effective.
And that was
that's a good point.
And I think that was kind of the point I was making. When he plays for City, obviously sometimes City have the ball in transition and stuff and, you know,
but even against Arsenal, when they were playing out from the back, they didn't get it into him enough from back to front when he was available.
Most of the time, he has players around him, right? I know Pep made the point that, he hasn't scored because he's got five players on top of him. I mean, doesn't happen that much because if I put five players on early Haaland, then, you know, Doku and Bernardo Silva, whoever else are free. But I am wondering about that. When week in, week out, you're used to playing in a certain way, you go with your national team. I mean, against Spain, the other point is not going to say, oh my God, it's Erling Haaland, let's man mark him, everybody, but put three people on him and whatever, because he's going to go there and say, no, we're Spain, I'm going to keep the Lucho thing going, we're going to go, and you know, I'm going to tell Laporte, you got him one-on-one, even if he doesn't, but you know, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Because you're a big team, you have to think like that. And so in light of that, I go back to this thing about being isolated. If we had a little bit more support, Alces is a very good player. We saw it last year at Benfica, especially in the first half of the season. But maybe if somebody got closer to him, tried to play a 1-2 rather than just releasing into space with Norway. You're the striker, Jan. Am I reading this? Is this the right use of Erling Haaland?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, because when we played, if we basically say we play 4-5-1, that's what we do. I was the lone striker for Norway, and you make a valuable point that sometimes then you feel very isolated, and not only that, you need a De Bruyne around you. You just need someone around you. That is to get that. The problem is, of course, when the identity of the way Norway play. Robbo was talking about the way we played in the 90s. We were more. We had our play. We took a long ball up to a striker or the Jostein Flo. We had midfielders coming. If that's been a Leonardsen coming, flying up, or it's Mini Jakobsen going for the second ball, we don't do that. The problem we had last night, that there was no identity in our team. We didn't pressure. We tried to pressure one and one. When the play was... okay, I'm not against the long ball, but then you need to support the striker. Because if the support... The main thing for a striker is not always to win the header, but to avoid the defender to win the header. So then you have to have people to jump in. We didn't have that. We don't have those kind of players. And then you will end up have a lack of identity. It's a bit this, it's a bit that. You know?
I was going back to the point I made earlier, that if Norway had pressed higher up the field and stopped Le Mans trying to play out from the back with Laporte and made it more difficult for Rodri, then they would have had to have gone longer and it would be a chance for the centre-halves of Norway to win the balls against Morata. And then when they win the ball, they're closer to Erling Haaland rather than having to play long balls into him and then no support to him and he gets isolated and he doesn't get so many touches. If you were winning the ball back higher up the field, he's involved in the game far more than if you're trying to defend deeply.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. But going back to the defenders, we don't trust the defenders, Robbo. So if we do a high pressure, we are afraid that we will be taken on speed, for example. We have Stefan Strandberg in there. He's good one against one, but one over the top and he's gone because he's too slow.
If you're pressing higher up the field, the players on the ball for the opposition have less time on the ball to pick out the right passes.
Yeah. The players on the ball are Gavi and Rodri and Fabian.
I'm talking about back players. If you press well, it's much easier for Norway's defenders to see the ball coming than when it's being played from 10, 15 yards away.
Jan is too polite to toot his own horn, so I'm a do it for him. Norway qualified for the 1998 World Cup for the first time in 60 years. Norway are kind of like, you guys are kind of like the Qatar of Europe, right? Except you don't go and buy World Cups so that you can then host them and qualify. You actually won it on the pitch, right? And they were in a qualifying group with Poland, our house, Turkey, right? A lot of people, England, okay, and San Marino, right?
And only... Netherlands.
Oh, sorry, and Holland, right? Who won that group?
We won it, and we were more surprised than everybody else. We scored the most goals. This is the "Do I Not Like That" generation of England, Graham Taylor. This is the generation. We qualified for 94, 96. We should have qualified, but we played a 1-1 at home in the last minute. Czechoslovakia, the Czechs did it. 98, we were there. 2000, were there. So there is something that is interesting. Is instead of asking why don't we qualify now, what did we do then? I think that is quite interesting, because that was more surprisingly that we don't qualify as we do now.
But it was quite clear, and it was quite clear at that particular time that Norway had a slightly different style of play to everybody else. But you knew exactly what you were doing. The coach knew what he wanted from you. He got that across to you, and you made it difficult for the. And then you got confidence because you knew exactly what you were doing.
Yeah, and a trust were there to the game. It's easier, of course. And I got a theory as well. If I may say, Manchester United, when you have now with Mourinho, with Solskjaer, you have Ten Hag, and they have all got the same problem. They're starting well, and then they're drifting off. And I think that is easier. And I'm not talking down our own performance in the 90s, but it's easier to play on the opponent. You get yourself back. You go on the counterattack. The problem with Manchester United, if you are expected to kind of do the game, we were never expected to do the game. I remember we beat Ghana at Ullevaal. I can't remember any Norwegian touched the ball, and we won 3-2. The last two goals were a long throw-in, Jostein Flo flicking, I was on a volley on the back paddle. This generation of players, Robbo, they wouldn't accept that. Yes. Manchester United don't accept that, only play on counter-attacks. And Norwegians, we are so happy now that we sometimes, every now and again, can play out from the back and look like a proper football team. And then I will quote Otto Rehhagel, my favorite quote, man. He said, "Modern football is to win football games."
Okay, so basically, I'm going to try to synthesize, correct me if I'm wrong. You're basically saying that if you're in Norway or Scotland, the way the modern game is, you need to play, you need to have a strong identity.
Absolutely.
You need to play to your strengths, and that might mean being pragmatic in certain games, adapting to it. And if I'm Scotland, I don't try to play like Manchester City.
No.
And maybe that's why they're doing so well in the group. And that's why, everywhere, are you on board with that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I always say, and I played under some decent coaches, some other coaches that I still wouldn't know what their game plan is, if they'd been my manager for 15 years. But there were certain coaches that you knew exactly what you was expected of you, what game plan you had when you went out on the field, and you then grew in confidence because you knew what you were going to do, and the opposition didn't always know what you were going to do. So you played to a certain game plan, and it was to your strengths as well. And that's what makes Scotland, at the moment, a decent side.
To wrap this, I'm going to plug my own story, as you mean. Regular.
I was going to say that's the first time you've ever done that.
I know. It's called synergy. But I had the opportunity to sit down with Rafaela Pimenta, who was Mino Raiola's longtime super agent, Mino Raiola's longtime business partner for nearly 30 years. After Raiola passed away in April of last year, a lot of people said, okay, he was the whole show. She's going to lose a bunch of clients inevitably. Mm. She's going to fade into the background. And she lost some clients, but many stayed, some they added, and she represents people like Matthijs de Ligt, like Paul Pogba, like Marco Verratti. And she also represents this Erling Haaland fellow. And one of the themes that I was interested in is, she's possibly, arguably, the most influential woman in football. I mean, she's not the top, she's right up there. And she just sort of talked about I assume she didn't face the hurdles that women sometimes face in male-dominated industries. Mm. And she says that absolutely, she still does. She's reminded of it all the time, despite having been at the top for 30 years. But she said it was maybe a little bit different in dealing with Haaland and Haaland's family, or Team Haaland,
And Jan as well. Was Jan included in that?
She did not mention Jan. She did. She mentioned Alfie Haaland and Egil Olsenstad and the people who work with him. But the suggestion was that maybe it's because when it comes to people growing up accustomed to seeing women in positions of power, decision-making power, Norway is in a different place than most of the rest of Europe. And so I want to get your take on it, Jan, because Norway, you had your first female prime minister in the early 80s. Even today in Norway, I think the previous prime minister before this one was also a woman. Even today, I mean, just even in sports, right? You would think the three biggest sports in Norway, right? Football, run by a woman, Lise Klaveson, skiing, run by a woman, and athletics, run by a woman. Now, your king is still a man, I believe, but otherwise he'd be a queen. But is there any truth to this? Like, did you not think about, oh, look, Mrs. So, like, when you were a kid, like, oh, look, you know, Mrs. So-and-so is the local chief of police. Not a big deal. Odd to me at all.
No, not a big issue at all by us. I see Rafael is saying the right things. That is what is in Norway. We don't care about that. When I speak to Rafael, I don't think she's a man or a woman. She's just a clever to what she's doing. And I think that culture is very, very strong in Norway. We also have the public share company is going to be in all boards, going to be 40% women, just to get that in, to get out, because men like to pick men. And I think that is also one of the reasons we are so against international federations. Have a look at the ski federation. I think there is one woman and she's voted in. Same as UEFA, same as FIFA, same with IOC. That's why we Norwegians love the Olympic Games and we don't like IOC. That is so into our core that we would like to have gender equality all over the pitch. And we don't see that. And that is never an issue. Are we sometimes also behind in women's football? Of course we are, because that takes time. You have to change your culture. It's getting better and better. But I think that is a spot on the analysis of Rafaela. That is not an issue. It's not that even we think of it. That is just the way it is.
To mind you, didn't in the 80s wasn't Britain run by a woman? We also had a queen as well, Margaret Thatcher, and we also had the queen.
I think you find a lot of people would disagree with your characterization of Margaret Thatcher, but we'll track that. We can just have a show. Well, ultimately, though, am I right? I like to remind people of this, right? The biggest sovereign wealth fund in the world isn't in Saudi Arabia or in Qatar or so on. It's actually in Norway. And Jan, correct me if I'm wrong, that's also run by a woman?
No, that is, last time I checked, he was a man.
Okay. All right. So,
but you're right. The head of our bank, the big banks, that is a Norwegian girl. And I think that's your thoughts of her. But as you say, that is never an issue in Norway. And I think that is brilliant. And Margaret Thatcher and the Queen, they were along. But I think what is quite interesting is that I think things are changing now. And I think the reason things will change in the right direction in terms of gender equality is that the sponsor budget, the companies are also run by women. So if you come in and say in sport, you say, hey, listen, we want your money. But you say, 50% of the inhabitants, they don't have a saying. Then the sponsor will say, no, we can't sympathize with that. We don't want to be identified with that. I think that the sports, if they don't change, and especially international federation, if they don't change, and there's one thing they understand, it's the sound of money. Sound of money can change things. And I just hope that will be the future, because as we are now with this men organization around Europe or the world, is not good for our sport that we love.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, enough Norway. How about some quick hits instead?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Huge game at Wembley tomorrow night, Robbo, as Italy take on England. My boys have had a bumpy ride, but they beat Malta at the weekend 4-0. How'd they look?
They looked okay. Some old players coming back. Bonaventura scored a great goal. With
Captain Jack got us high, yeah, baby.
Playing quite high up the field. Berardi scored a couple of good goals as well. It's not a team that I, when you look at them on paper, it's not a team I would say should beat England. But if Spalletti gets the best out of them, if they work to a certain game plan, if they can keep the ball in the right areas, they can still cause one or two problems. But overall, I think England will beat Italy. Meanwhile, Gab, Tonali and Zaniolo had to pull out the Italy squad as they're being investigated for betting on football. What might that mean, not just for them, but for Newcastle and Aston Villa?
So, yeah, so this is a shock investigation. It started actually with Juventus midfielder Nicolò Fagioli. According to the reports, he is a gambling addict. It's not 100% clear whether he was actually betting on sports, or he lost more than €1 million reportedly. And this is young, he's a professional footballer, but he's a young kid. It's not like he's Cristiano Ronaldo in terms of what he can afford to lose. Tonali and Zaniolo have taken very different approaches. Neither one has actually spoken, but sources close to Zaniolo say that he never bet on sports of any kind, and he was simply playing online poker. Sandro Tonali has apparently come out, or his people have come out and suggested that he has a gambling addiction. They haven't come out and said that he has not bet on football. I think. But the maximum fine, we're talking 3 years. And if they've been found to be bet on their own, maximum punishment, 3 years. And if they found to have bet on their own teams, then it could be as high as 5 years. So you can imagine this is a serious blow for Newcastle, just spent €80 million on Tonali and, of course, Villa with Zaniolo as well. I'd been very hard on football. I don't think this is something that can be tolerated. Applied to even Tony. And it applies here too. The best thing they can do is tell the truth. Certainly, as far as Zaniolo is concerned, if it's true that he never bet on football, I don't think that there is a problem. No. It's not a crime to go and lose money at the casino. Tonali's situation more complex, but right now we don't have facts. We just have reports. So main thing is that they go and get help and cooperate. England warmed up for this game with a 1-0 win over Australia, with Ollie Watkins bagging goal in his debut. Robbo, is he the right backup for Harry Kane?
I think he is. I look at someone like Callum Wilson, who, when I watched Newcastle last year, I can think Newcastle are a good team, and it went up to the front player. I know he scored goals, and I think, is he really a top-class player, Callum Wilson? I don't think so. Ollie Watkins, I think he's got all-round ability. I think he's got that enough pace.
Is he more technical than Wilson?
I think
Wilson?
He absolutely is. He's got more ability to run in behind. I think he's a better player with his back to goal. I think he's more clever with his little one-twos, and he can see a pass as well. I think he's a very good player, and I can't believe he hasn't been in the squad a little bit earlier than this game against Australia. Now, Jordan Henderson was booed at Wembley by England fans. Gareth Southgate says he doesn't understand it because Henderson has 79 caps and his commitment and performances for England have been exceptional. Can you help him out, Gab?
Yes, and look, as you know, I really like Gareth Southgate as a person. Mm-hmm. Of the privilege of meeting him, and he's a good guy.
He says the same about you, Mike.
And I think he's a clever person. So I think he just said this because this is manager speak. Mm-hmm. I think Gareth knows exactly why they booed him. They're not booing Jordan Henderson because they think he plays poorly for England or they think he's not committed to England. They're booing Jordan Henderson for one specific reason, because he went to Saudi Arabia after speaking out on LGBTQ rights, and they see that as something hypocritical, and they want to let him know. I hate this when managers come out and says, well, but he's a great servant for the club. Why are they booing him? Yeah. They're booing him, obviously, for something that has nothing to do with Jordan Henderson's football. Now, some may not like Henderson as a player or whatever.
That's not why they're booing.
It's not why they're booing him. And also, this, don't bring up the 79 caps. That's the past. Don't bring up coming in the past. They talk about the present. Or don't talk about it. Don't get involved. Which I don't. Southgate shouldn't need to get involved in this, right? So I can understand why he said it. But, you know, let's also not play dumb here. You know why he's being booed. Holland lose at home to France 2-1 as Kylian Mbappe scores two goals, one of them the second one. Legit. Wonderful. Yeah. Ridiculous. And also, it's the Post. Robbo, Jules isn't here to make fun of Ronald Koeman and call him the Dutch guy and all the stuff. Would you like to do it in his place? Because if they screw up against Greece tonight, they're likely headed for the playoffs.
Yeah, they're not doing particularly well. They didn't play well in this game against France. France had more possession. They had more chances. They couldn't cope with killing Mbappe. They didn't create enough chances of their own. They looked a little bit one-dimensional. Weghorst started up front. It just wasn't a very good performance. They played with a back four. Dumfries, normally a right wing back, was playing as the sort of right-sided winger or attacking player. He took a long time to bring Marlon.
Yeah, who was he up against?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
and Marlon, the player that proved to be their most dangerous player, came on in the second half. So at the moment, Ronald Koeman's not doing a very good job, and Holland don't look a particularly good team.
Shout out to that guy Hartman, though.
Hartman. Yeah, excellent goal. Now we're getting closer to resolving the Manchester United ownership issue, Gab. Sheikh Yassim has apparently pulled out once and for all, and Sir Jim Ratcliffe is reportedly buying a quarter of the club for £1.4 billion and will get operational control. What does this mean?
So, well, first of all, £1.4 billion, quarter of the club, this would value the club for people to whom this is important. And by the way, to me, it is not super significant. Nope. It's really just a stupid Forbes list and other morons like that. Advise the club at $5.6 billion, so the Glazers can say, aha, look, we were right. It is worth more than $5 billion. I think behind the scenes, there will be... So this is good for the Glazers because they can get some of their cash out and they can maybe even pay off some of their siblings. The Glazer siblings were less interested in Manchester United because obviously Joel and Avi Glazer are into it. Others, like, you know, Sister Darcy, I don't know how much of a... I don't know if she's ever been to Old Trafford, to be honest. But I think Jim Ratcliffe only does this if he gets control, right? Because he's not going to give $1.4 billion to the Glazers just so the Glazers can make the decision. So there will be, over time, and you presume Ratcliffe is going to put more money in, maybe his equity stake increases, there'll be some discussion about it, about how things are likely to go. Interestingly, it's been reported, which I thought was interesting, is a lot of the top executives at the club, both on the sporting side and on the business side, they wanted Sheikh Yassim. They didn't want Ratcliffe because essentially they fear for their jobs. They think Ratcliffe is going to want to bring in some of his own people, like that guy, cycling's his name, Dave Brailsford.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see how that one goes. But some United fans disappointed because they wanted Yassim. I think this is the beginning of the Glazers slowly moving out of the picture.
Yeah.
All the people don't like the Glazers. I think, you know, I'm not saying you uncork champagne, but it is a happier day than it was yesterday. Speaking of Sir Jim, he reportedly wants to expand Old Trafford to 90,000. So presumably this is to generate more money. But Robbo, I want to get from you, beyond a certain number, does it make a difference whether it's 60,000 or 90,000? I mean,
not in terms of atmosphere. You're right. From a building point of view, if you're going to sort of have to rebuild the stadium because it is looking old and tatty at the moment, you might as well build it up. You're going to knock something down. You might as well make it.
They'll have no problems filling it.
I don't think they'd have any problems filling it. Not generally, not for Premier League games. They might for one or two other games. But I think it sounds like a good idea, to be honest. Brazil held to a 1-1 draw by Venezuela in South American qualification. That's a bit of a shock for Fernando Diniz, isn't it?
The man who's holding the place warm for Juan Carleto Ancelotti. It's interesting because Denise, I think, is much more attack-oriented than I'm not saying Ancelotti or Tite were, but because obviously those were attacking managers in a situation.
Yeah.
But he's almost more sort of philosophically, more of the press and stuff. I don't know how well that works. They did create chances. They could have scored more. But can I just show some love to Venezuela and their friend Ale Moreno?
Oh, I was going to say.
This is a huge, huge point for them. A tremendous goal. Did you see the goal, the overhead goal?
I think Ale Moreno was in the stands. Did you see all those people celebrating in the Venezuela end?
But a tremendous goal as well for Venezuela.
Didn't have too many chances other than that, though, did they?
No, Brazil will be just fine. But, you know, let Venezuela celebrate. Christian Pulisic scores a great goal for the United States, but then Julian Nagelsmann, on his debut as Germany coach, cues a 3-1 comeback. Robbo, how did the Euro 2024 host look? And would you like to say some nice things about Pulisic?
Well, first of all, I'll say the nice things about Pulisic. His goal was exceptional. You know, he started off down one end of the field. He played a little 1-2. He got into the box. Great finish with his right foot. A fantastic finish. As for Germany, it's interesting that they're going to go back to the old way of playing with a big centre forward. Füllkrug played up front. Sané played on the right-hand side. Wirtz on the left-hand side. Musiala played in behind. Gundogan in central midfield alongside Gross. But I slightly worry and wonder why Hummels is making a comeback. You know, I've seen him play for Dortmund over recent times, and he can't run anymore.
I would assume it's because he feels he doesn't maybe necessarily have a right back, and so it's almost like the old 3.5 system. Because
yeah.
Jonathan Tah was back.
Yeah.
So the idea, we have possession. Yeah, we have possession all the time. So it's really a back three, and then the left back pushes on.
But people will argue that Sula was the substitute. Sula, according to Fanishtil, one of the commentators on the Bundesliga,
Lutz Fanishtil,
over a 15-meter distance, Sula is one of the quickest players in the Bundesliga.
But he is very fast over longer distances. People don't think so because he's enormous, but obviously 15 meters, I'm not sure.
Yeah, so could you still
over
play
50,
him at centre-half alongside Rudiger? That would surely be a better centre-half combination.
I would have thought so.
Mm. Now, Argentina stayed perfect in qualifying with a 1-0 win over Paraguay. Gab, your thoughts on that one?
So, first of all, Otamendi, what a goal after 3 minutes, 35-year-old centre-half. Bosh, they got.
Well, set play.
Well, I was very happy for him.
Yeah.
After that, this game got really physical, really nasty, as often happens when you play Paraguay. Messi came on, and I think it was inside the hour mark. He hits the woodwork twice. When the corner kick, he almost scored the Olympic goal. Where, you know, he hits the woodwork off a corner kick. Another one off.
Sent the goalkeeper the wrong way from a free kick. Yeah.
Yeah. Come on. It's fun to watch. He can strike balls.
A couple of sending offs should there have been during the game?
I think there could have been many. Could have been many. Wales beat Croatia 2-1 to keep their qualifying hopes alive as Harry Wilson scores two goals. Robbo, it's going down to the wire for Luka Modric and co.
Absolutely. It's them or Wales. And Wales showed better spirit. They showed better form. I thought Wales played well. Harry Wilson scored a couple of very good goals.
Did you know he could head the ball?
No,
he's
I didn't know.
He's a little guy.
He's known for his free kicks. He's known for his left foot. It was a great run for the first goal. And as is always the case with Croatia in the last few years, in midfield, they still look a very good side. They've still got players that can play out from the back. It's in the front areas where they just lack that little bit of extra creativity. That's the problem for them. Now, Portugal, meanwhile, make it 7 wins out of 7 as they beat Slovakia 3-2. And funny enough, Cristiano Ronaldo adds to his goals tally. 2 he got.
Yeah, it wasn't the greatest performance from Portugal. But, you know what, it's difficult to get the motivation up, as we said. Like, when you've won every game so far, he scored a penalty. The other one was a far-post tap-in. 125 goals for the great man. He's now only 65 goals behind Christine Sinclair for the all-time international record. I'm kidding, guys. I'm kidding. He has scored by far more goals in the men's game than anybody else. It's looking ugly for Poland as they're held at home by Moldova 1-1. No Robert Lewandowski, of course, but surely you expect more, Robbo.
Absolutely. And they probably deserve more. They got lots of crosses into the box. They had people attacking the ball. They had 3 or 4 headers that should have been scored from. They didn't. Moldova got an early-ish goal, and Poland are struggling at the moment.
Don't control their destiny.
How about Turkey and your boy, Vincenzo Montella? They beat Latvia, a very poor Latvia, it has to be safe, 4-0, and have qualified now, Turkey.
Latvia are not very good at playing football right now.
Not
so. I don't want you too excited. I just want to celebrate Turkey because they brought it home.
Or Turkey, as we're meant to call them.
Turkey, as they're known now. They changed managers. Is obviously big for them because they'll be hosting 2032. And I think they do have some really interesting players coming through.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm happy for Montella.
Yeah.
El Mundo Deportivo reports that Pep Guardiola and Manchester City may look to pick up Toni Kroos when his contract with Real Madrid expires next summer. Good idea, Robbo?
He's still performing quite well, I would say, for Real Madrid. He's still an excellent passer of the ball. I question his defensive qualities, as I would have questioned them when he was a lot younger, but they're getting worse now. And he's quite often played as the holding midfield player when Ancelotti hasn't been happy with Tchouaméni. He hasn't done that job particularly well. Is he better than Phillips? who Guardiola doesn't like at all at Man City. Yeah, probably he's a much better player in terms of his passing quality. Is it a good idea? I don't think so.
Yeah,
I think his days are gone.
At his age in a passing, in a pressing side. In a different team, sure. But
his days are gone.
I wonder if this is a little mischievous too. El Mundo Deportivo, of course, from Catalonia. You know, reporting rumours involving a Real Madrid player.
You wouldn't believe it, would you? So, since Sheikh Yassim will not be buying Manchester United, he's now been linked with Inter Milan, or Inter. Is this doable, Gav?
Well, Inter have been for sale for a long, long time. Yeah. It's, you know, downside cheaper. Yeah. The asking price, I think, around 1.2 billion euros.
Has it got as much potential?
The thing with Inter is, obviously, you need to clear a lot of debt. You need to pay for a new stadium. Does it have the same potential as Manchester United? No, they're not, unless they join the Premier League. No.
No.
Also, you know, but if he decides that he's a big football fan, he wants to get involved. But of course, how do I say this nicely? With Sheikh Yassim, there was always a sense, hey, are you a big football fan and is this really your money or is this part of some broader scheme to serve the interests of Qatar? And if it's the latter, they're already involved with Paris Saint-Germain. I don't know. It's costing them a ton of money. I don't know how much longer that's going to go. So, no. I mean, I think Inter are a nice fixer-upper if you have a couple billion and you can run the club better and turn them, you know, help them achieve their potential financially as well. But I don't know why he would necessarily get involved unless he has the money. Flo Balogun told our colleague Conor O'Halloran on ESPN that Mikel Arteta would have kept him around, but people above the manager's head decided he had to go. Robert, are you buying this? And who would you have kept, Balogun or Nketiah? Are you Team Flo or Team Eddie?
Well, I think you know what you're going to get with Nketiah, and that's probably not quite good enough. So Balogun, I would have probably kept. We haven't seen his full potential. He may go on and be an excellent player. And Nketiah is always going to be in the minds, I think, Arsenal fans and everybody that watches him, just that little bit off the top that would make Arsenal title winners.
So was it a case that maybe the... Well, first of all...
But I would probably say that Arteta probably didn't sell it to the people above him either. He didn't say, hey, well, he's way, way better than Nketiah.
1,000%. So, first of all, Arteta's muscle with the money men and the people above him has only increased because of the season he had last year. I would assume that, you know, they probably said to him, hey, Eddie was a free agent. You made us give him this big contract a year ago. Are you sure this other dude is better? Because it's going to be difficult to shift Eddie. And he probably said exactly what you said. Yeah. I know what I get with Eddie.
Yeah.
Can Balogun adapt? How quickly can he adapt? Should we cash it? And also, they probably also said to him, hey, we got to pay for Declan Rice and Kai Havertz and Jurrien Timber. Mm. If we can get some money from Balogun, let's shift Balogun.
Yeah.
And obviously, they're going to get more money for Balogun than they're going to get for Eddie.
Yeah.
Simple as.
Now, the Daily Mail reports that a number of Premier League owners, led by who else but Todd Bowley, are pushing for every single Premier League game to be televised domestically from 2029. Gab, how likely is this?
So, look, first of all, they're doing their jobs, right?
Yeah.
Businessmen, they want to maximize TV revenue, and they think they're going to get that by showing every single game. Already, it's going to increase in the next right cycle. It's going to go up to either 250 or 270 for the 4 years leading up to 2029. This, as you know, speaks right to the heart of English culture, the 3 o'clock Saturday blackout, because if you're going to televise every game, unless you decide we're never going to play at 3 o'clock on Saturday and, you know, crap on that aspect of English football history like you've crapped on other ones, you will then have to lift the 3 o'clock blackout. Mm. How do you feel about, I mean, you grew up here, right? And back when there was no football on television or very little.
Very little.
But how do you feel about the three? Is it important for the lower leagues? Is it part of ingrained in the minds of the pyramid right down to non-league football?
I suppose, most people that work from Monday to Friday, probably want to spend the day with their family on a Sunday, 3 o'clock is the ideal time for people to go and watch football in England. You know, we're not talking about
the Premier. Watch in the stadium, not sit at home.
Not sit at home. So if you want to go and watch a game, 3 o'clock's the ideal time. You can go and do a little bit of shopping in the morning, take your kids to the park or whatever it is. Then you say to your wife or whatever, or the wife says to the husband, I'm now going to go and watch the football. I'm going to leave at 1:30. I'll be back by 6. It's the ideal time to watch football for me.
All right, so you're a bit of a traditionalist there.
Yeah, yeah.
See, my take on this is I think there's also an element of fairness involved, right? I would do it in such a way that only sellouts can be shown if you are going to lift the 3 o'clock back out. And look, most Premier League games sell out because there's also an element of fairness. Look, I'm an Arsenal fan. I can never get a ticket because I can't afford one because they always sell out, because I don't have a season ticket, right? So I think there's a lot to be said for that. And, you know, is it fair to go and protect the rights of dorking wanderers against the rights of Arsenal fans who want to watch their team? I mean, I think this is a debate to be had. I don't think watching a game on television is a substitute for going in person.
Not at all.
I think the pyramid is healthy enough that people will still go.
Yeah.
But I think this is something you need to think about. And I think they need to also think about, you know, the priority is to be full stadiums. So I would actually, to incentivize clubs, I would actually say, hey, you can show your game on TV if you sell out. And extend it to clubs in the Championship too.
But don't clubs still say they've sold out and then you get to the ground and it's 3/4 full?
Yeah, because they've sold their tickets. That's poor pricing. That's all it is. Bild in Germany reporting that Sokratis Papastathopoulos, who is a free agent, is a target for Bayern given the injuries to Upamecano and Matthijs de Ligt. Rubble, I am a big Sokratis fan. I feel really bad about the injuries that kind of stopped him from becoming what he could have become. Obviously, the spell at Arsenal didn't quite work out. But he's 35 now. There must be a reason he's unattached. Is it necessary to add bodies like this?
Not really, no. Sokratis, as you just said, was an excellent player, particularly when he was playing for Borussia Dortmund. He was fast, he was strong, he was decent on the ball as well. I thought he was a good leader. But there's a reason that he's unattached. He's older now, he can't run quite so quickly, which is one of his major strengths. He's not played for a little while. It's not a good idea to bring someone
in. Are you really so stuck now for bodies at the moment? I asked in the summer, when they kept adding oversized center backs, right? You know, the Upamecano, De Ligt, and they get Kim. And obviously, people have left. Hernandez has left. Pavard has left. Both of them could play center back.
Yeah.
But it seems crazy to me that now they're shorthanded just
because
two guys
are left. You're a club like Bayern Munich, and you haven't got anybody coming through the system that could come and do a good job as center back.
I think if Tommy T were here, he would say, yeah, not just that. We don't have any defensive midfielders we can move into the back. That's why I wanted to get Palinha. You know, what if I had a big, tall dude who could occasionally step into the back line? Oh, no, I don't have that either. No. All you have is these little dudes like Joshua Kimmich and Musiala, right? What am I supposed to do?
Dear.
Give us some sympathy for him.
No. Former Genk, Brugge, and Monaco boss Philippe Clément will be replacing Michael Beale at Rangers. Is it a good choice, Gab?
So obviously he's going to be evaluated only on one thing. Will he finish ahead of Celtic, right?
Probably not.
probably certainly not this season. But I think he's a good coach. I think he's shown that in the right dimension. And obviously he won titles at Genk. I think he won titles at Bruges too. Right? He can deliver success. And, you know, wasn't great at Monaco for a number of reasons. But I think Rangers could be the right dimension. I like the fact that he says, screw this, I'm going to Scotland, right? I got full stadium, 50,000 fans or however many Irish.
You've got the chance to be a hero.
I got a chance to play European football.
Yeah.
And judge me on that, not on, you know, how quickly do I close the gap with Celtic. There's got to be more to it than that.
Yeah.
Roma and Jose Mourinho have been linked with a move for Eric Dier, who isn't getting much playing time under my man Ange at Spurs. Rob, if your phone rings, it's Jose, and he says, oh, what do you think?
What do you want? Do you want somebody that's okay on the ball and can, you know, pass it quite well or play longer passes into the front players? Or do you want a good defender? if he says, I want a good defender, I say, I don't get Eric Dier. He's not quick enough. He doesn't read danger quickly enough. He's a liability. If you want somebody who's just going to play out from the back because you're going to be on top in most games, which Roma aren't at the moment, you might want to pick him. But I would say no. I'm not an Eric Dier fan at the moment.
I think he's had injuries back there. And I think Dier, he loved Dier when he worked with Dier. Dier was a Jose loyalist. I think that's maybe part of his thinking there.
He could do a Daniele De Rossi job for Roma, couldn't he? Because he played in midfield.
You already have Brian Cristante to do that.
Yeah, but he played in midfield quite a bit. And at one point, De Rossi went from a holding midfield player to sweeper, back into holding midfield player. I think that was under Luis Enrique, was that?
Right.
So anyway, now Inter have been linked with a move for Porto's Mehdi Taremi in January. Does this make sense to you, Gab?
Again, a wise man says there are no bad assets, only incorrectly priced assets. Taremi has 6 months left in his deal. He's 31 years old. I'm pretty sure he's not going to get younger. But then again, you're asking him to provide you something off the bench that the guys, Alexis Sanchez is 37 or whatever, Arnautovic is 34 and vice versa, aren't providing you. So yeah, he can do a job, but at what cost are you going to get him? I think Inter saying, going to Porto and say, dude, you're not going to sign a new contract. You can lose him for free in the summer. Loan him to us or whatever. Give him to us for between 5 and 10 million. Not a lot of money. 3-year deal. Then I think Inter have gotten themselves a good, hardworking player. And I think that's something that they've lost. I think they're hoping that he can be... He's not like Dzeko in the sense that he doesn't have Dzeko's technical ability.
No.
But he has a physicality and he has work rate. And I think that's something, Lautaro has different skills, Thuram has different skills. We thought they were going to get it from Arnautovic. Arnautovic is injured, he's not going to be back until the end of November.
So this is a yes.
It's a better option.
From what I'm hearing here, Gabby, you're saying yes.
If the price is right, Mehdi Taremi is I think he's a very good footballer in his day. Fabrizio Romano reports that Chelsea's Trevo Chalaba is on the market in January. Now, obviously, he was close to a move to Bayern in August, speaking of Bayern center backs. I just wonder, why isn't he getting on the pitch?
I'm not sure. You can...
If it feels like... I get it, right? You have, obviously, Fofana's injured. You have De Zazzi. You got Colwill. And you have Thiago Silva, right? What I don't get is it feels like Thiago Silva, if he's fit, he plays every game, which maybe he shouldn't be doing at his age, right? De Zazzi, not my cup of tea, but whatever.
Yeah.
Colwill, phenomenal, but then he often likes to play Colwill at fullback for some weird reason. Not that he can't play there, but clearly you already have Matson and Chilwell. Why you got, whatever. But it seems like Chalaba, he just doesn't, you put Chalaba on the Lukaku step.
And that happens with some managers. We don't know. We only see what goes on the pitch. You think, Chalabar's a decent player and why isn't he getting a look in? You have to go behind the scenes, and when Pochettino is trying to get the player to understand the tactics, he's getting him to do certain things and he can't do them, then straight away a manager or a coach thinks, I can't trust him, or he's not going to be at the player that I want, so I'm not going to pick him. Let's move him on. And that can happen with quite good players. Every coach has a different idea about certain players. You just mentioned about Mourinho liking Eric Dier. He saw something in Eric Dier that Ange doesn't like. And that could be the case with Pochettino with Chalaba.
What I would hate is that this is simply a situation where Chalaba is a player who can be monetized more so than... Because you could make the similar thing about Marco Correa, right? Marco Correa is a left back or a left-sided center back, right? He obviously doesn't fit into Poch's plans. He's literally, whatever order you want to put them in, Chilwell, Matson, Colwill are ahead of him at left back. So he plays right back when everybody else is injured. And yet he's still around. And I don't think it's because he necessarily thinks Cucurella is a better player than Chalaba. I think it's because Cucurella arrived for a lot of money, which means high amortization. He probably signed a big contract because this is before they started, giving out the smaller contracts. Chalaba is homegrown, so whatever money you get when you sell him...
Which seems to have been the case at Chelsea for a long, long time now, when you look at the players that have gone somewhere else.
I get that, but it doesn't help Cucurella.
No.
I mean, he still gets paid whenever to play the game. Yeah, I get all that, right? But it doesn't help him. It doesn't help Chalaba, and I'm not sure it helps. I'm not sure it helps Chelsea either.
Now, Antonio Conte says he would like to work with a team that has won something recently. He pointed out that when he took over at Chelsea and Juventus, they both finished seventh the season before.
Yeah, look, the problem is, I'm sure he'd love to replace Pep Guardiola at Manchester City, you know, I'm sure. But the point is, when teams bring in a new manager, it's usually because the old manager hasn't done well and hasn't won, right? Or, I mean, in some cases, obviously, they retire or whatever. So, yeah, thank you, Captain Obvious. And by the way, I might suggest that the fact that you took over Chelsea and Juventus after seventh place finishes absolutely helped you because you weren't playing European football and you were successful straight away. You could go in and shout and scream and, you know, make demands of the ownership precisely because, guys, we stunk it up last year. I'm going to, you know, rip everything up, rebuild everything. It's easier to come into a bad situation and turn it around.
Yeah.
And it's much harder to think that, like, oh, well, I'm just going to go and ride on somebody else's coattails. An arrest warrant has been issued in California for Daniel Sturridge after he reportedly failed to attend a court summons. Robbo, this stems from an incident in 2019 when his dog went missing and he offered a reward for its return. A rapper, and I'm not making this up, named Killa Fame, no relation to Ghostface Killa, in case you're wondering, says he returned the dog but never got the $30,000 reward, which is why he's suing him. Sturridge says it wasn't him, but it was, quote, a young boy who returned the dog and duly got his reward. I'm reliably informed, by the way, Killa Fame is not a, quote, young boy. Are you Team Sturridge or Team Killa Fame in this one?
Well, I've got to say I do like Killa Fame's music. I think he's absolutely outstanding when he's playing at his very best. We have to be careful because it's a legal matter at the moment, but
it's okay. This is the UK where you're where somebody gets arrested. Oh no, there's legal proceedings. Let's never mention Gylfi Sigurdsson's name ever again. Ha! I did it. I can mention Gylfi Sigurdsson's name now. We don't have to pretend like he never existed. Sorry. Digression.
What's happened? He says a boy's done it. He's given the boy the money. He brought the dog back. Now,
but he didn't say how much he gave him. So maybe he didn't.
Oh yes, but the $30,000 was the reward, wasn't it? I'm going to go with Daniel Sturridge. I think he's probably telling the truth, and Killa Fame thinks it's a way of him getting a bit more extra money because his records aren't selling very well at the moment.
I don't know. I just love the thing. There's like a picture of Killa Fame in the car with a dog that looks like
Maybe there's two dogs.
Well, I was wondering, twins. Like, could he have found like a picture of Sturridge's dog on Instagram and gone and bought another dog and said, like, hey, look, here you go.
Because as they say about the sort of pyramids, once you've seen one dog, you've seen them all, haven't you?
There you go. They're all identical.
Now, Gab, Zlatan Ibrahimovic says he helped launch Rafael Leao's career and could have done the same for Mario Balotelli, but Super Mario wasted too many chances.
Okay, first of all, with all the love and affection in the world for Zlatan, I don't know about young Zlatan. Like, if we're talking about young players making mistakes and so on, I
think he probably made a few, didn't he?
I think young Zlatan might have made a few. I think, but maybe this was Zlatan's point. Maybe Zlatan's point was like, oh, by the time I played with Balotelli at Inter, I wasn't young Zlatan anymore. I had a good head on my shoulders, and I could have shown you the way, Super Mario. Super Mario did not take it well. He didn't like being compared in the negative sense to Rafael Leao. And a little bit, I can see his point, because by the time Super Mario was Leao's age, that's when he was good. That's when he was, you know, scoring two goals in the Manchester Derby, winning things with Manchester City.
Is that when he had to be taken off in the World Cup game against Uruguay because he was going to get sent off, and eventually Italy lost?
You know what? It's happened to other people in the past who've done stupid things. But it's funny because he took this personally. He was obviously watching. He replied on Instagram with a picture of the Champions League trophy,
which, of course,
he won.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, he lost his place in the starting side to Goran Pandev, who, by the way, Goran Pandev wasn't always old, but he was old back then already. and then he takes a little backhanded jibe. He says, Zlatan, don't worry about it. I love you anyway. Oh, and by the way, and if he's referring to the 2008-09 season when they were knocked out by Manchester United, he talked about how Zlatan was scared in Manchester. So this is perfect Zlatan trolling. And we'll see if Zlatan responds.
I'm sure he will.
I find it entertaining anyway. Robbo, this brings us to an end, but thank you so much for filling in. We're going to be back on Thursday. I'm going to have Nadia Manua with me and making his studio debut, the one, the only, Luis Miguel Echegaray, talking a bit of South American qualifiers. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.